Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf, using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
Two Poets Laureate today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Rebecca Wee.
And I'm Don Wooten. Rebecca, of course, is a former poet laureate, but so is today's guest, Dale Hockey, on Scribble. A poet must not be cocky unless his name's Dale Hockey.
I am humbled in the presence of Rebecca Wee. I will tell you that every time. Oh. Let's get that clear.
And that's not my line. That's Don's.
In Saturday Morning Live, I would have you over rather frequently to read poems. And the thing that fascinated me is he has an inexhaustible supply of these things.
Mm-hmm. I remember one time, and I've been writing most of my life, but there was a period of time where I was just so incredibly busy with my job and family and trying to do the best I could. And I said, I've got to get a shot in the arm. So I went to Comm University where Rebecca was teaching a class, and it was so incredibly inspiring.
Aww.
It was so inspiring that I rejuvenated my poetic life. And someone asked my wife, how's Dale doing? Well, he's cranking out poems like donuts, she said. But they're not always sweet. In fact, they're about all these D's: death, destruction, depression, despair. Mm-hmm. And my family said, "Don't you ever write anything happy?" And I said, "Leave me alone."
No, life is dark and hard.
Yes, I mean, that's what's worth writing about. Now, granted, in the few I brought today, I have a little bit of a variety, but there's some tougher ones.
We have that discussion in poetry classes every semester, every year. Students are wondering why poems are so dark and depressing, and they're apologizing for writing dark and depressing poems. And I think half worried that I'm going to call them into my office and say, "Are you okay?" And, you know, we end up having some really interesting discussions about why that is. Why are so many poems heavy? And, you know, one of the sort of easy answers, I suppose, is when all is going well, you're just out in the world living it. And when things are painful and hard, we're trying to figure it out. And one of the ways for writers to figure it out is to go to the page.
You process it.
Yeah. That you're trying to work through it, trying to figure it out.
And rather than hit somebody,
that's a good way to live.
This is what tends to come out. And people that know me, they know me as this sunny, bubbling personality, optimistic, mm-hmm. happy. And then they go, "Boy, your poetry is just the opposite of who you are." I go, "Well, you know, it's just what I write. Sorry."
No, it's the happy guy that's the fake, the real Dale.
It's like for 44 years, I'm a poet masquerading as a lawyer. That's the way it is. That's the way I feel.
Well, you dropped the mask, and now you're just poetry, huh?
Well, I quote, retired, unquote, December 31, but I have some cases that are extremely difficult. And I'm still working quite hard to wrap up these cases before I can really say, call it a day. It'd be kind of unethical to just drop these clients in mid-case, and so I'm bound and determined to finish them. My wife says, what kind of retirement is this when you're working 55 hours a week?
She's saying, well, I'm trying to get there. I'm trying to get there.
So
that's, women are more sensible than men and very direct.
It's my fault. I probably should have planned better, but these are tough cases, and you just, I've got people opposing me. I can't just do what I want. I've got lawyers opposing what I'm trying to do. So
how long do you figure you've got to finish cases? Are you talking a month or two, a year?
Yes, two months. Okay. May 31 is really my drop-dead date, and after that, if we're not quite at the finish line, somebody else is going to have to finish. And the problem is, in the Central District of Illinois, there's really nobody else except a nice guy in Peoria, and he's already conflicted out of at least one of them. So, but that's
it's better to write poetry.
Much better.
So let's hear some.
Yeah, let's hear a poem.
Well, all right. Speaking of, I did bring four, and you know, you always wonder what to read.
Uh-huh.
What should you read? You know, who am I reading to? Sometimes you read for yourself. I mean, that's my favorite audience.
not a critical one.
You know what you're going to say about.
To quote Rebecca, we do not fall in love with your own work.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I try and keep that in mind, and it just never sinks in.
You know, you can fall in love with it. You just have to. It's like falling in love with a person. You can't. You can't believe that there will be nothing complicated about it, that there will be nothing that later you'll look at and go, wait a minute, why did I say that? What did I mean? What was going on?
Yes. Yeah. And so in addition to reading for myself, well, should I be reading for other poets? Well, I think that's a good idea. You know, mm-hmm. I like the idea of reading to other poets and finding out what they think. But we're on a radio show, and it would be, I think, the best idea to try and read for the audience. So I brought a variety today, and I brought a kind of a heavy one that I'm going to start with, and I'm going to then read a kind of humorous one, which, of course, is about the bubonic plague. So you know, that's how humorous I can get. And I have an inspirational one. So we'll see how it goes here.
All right.
The first one is one that I was in November. I was lying awake. I was in the north of Spain. I had 16 hours of plane rides and everything, and I'm lying in bed that night, and my heart's fluttering, and I couldn't sleep, and it's total darkness, and I felt around for a pencil in my bag, and I felt around for a piece of paper, and I lighted my phone. Is it blank paper? Yes. Okay. I start scratching in the total darkness. My wife says, what are you doing? And I said, I'm writing a poem. Now? I said, why not? So
you got to get them down when they come.
You got to get them down. And so I got a kernel. I got some things out of it. And then I worked on it. And this one happens to be the third substantive draft. And it's called.
We're a third of the way into the program.
Okay, all right. This one is called Birch Forest. I was lost again among the birches, unforgiving, anonymous in their haughtiness, in their unspoken monotony. Rucksack empty, I think, except those iffy berries, unrecognizable and bitter. A little dizzy now, in a Dali painting without light or heat. The blinding snow, the silent trees, pushing forward or in a circle, I cannot be sure. A false light, only the moonstruck trees, starless gray sky, nothing to go by, the coefficient of uncertainty, faint footsteps behind, or the sound of my heart beating still, toes throbbing in a hopeless rhythm. No nuts left to munch on, but behind me, vague footfalls stop and go as I try to listen, as I try to orient myself. Childhood dreams enter, too much, push on. Sleepy now, the crack of a gun, or a birch laughing in not so silent, taunting, haunting. And then, the nightmare, now trudging, nowhere to go, to go, to go. Push on under the pale light of the inhuman moon, cold and distant, its chill ricocheting across the razor straightness of the birches, the birches, the birches. Pencil beginning to fade now, and then a new smell spread upon my face, the sweat of prey across my brow, and then...
And then?
And then. And that's prey as in P-R-E-Y, right?
You bet.
Yep.
You bet.
Yeah.
It's an ars poetica, isn't it? I mean, if you think about it. So my students are working on those, the art of poetry, where you write poems about writing poems or what poems are or where they come from or why you do it. You know, there's a... That sounds like, so did you wake up from a dream and that's part of what you're doing?
Or I don't know think if it... I don't think I woke up from a dream. I just thought there were a couple lines and I just saw myself.
Then you went there.
And then I went there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And the next morning I couldn't even read some of what I had written.
Sure.
And of course this was,
yeah.
On the envelope was only the kernel, you know, a part of a stanza here, a part of a stanza, but the idea and
the
I
mood,
also.
The mood or the
mood,
tone of it too.
The darkness, the aloneness, the, you know, I don't think about death much, but my heart was just, you know, racing that night. And mm-hmm. I'm thinking, you know, what if this is the end? Well. Let's at least get one poem.
Get one
before
last poem.
Yeah,
isn't that interesting?
You know, we talk about end times. Once I got terribly sick in Springfield, went to a gourmet restaurant where you can always get food poisoning. And I was so sick, I thought this is the end. And I passed out. And I went through one of those things where you suddenly see yourself. You're above yourself, and you see yourself mm-hmm. lying in bed. Mm-hmm. And then I was on a platform in Paducah, Kentucky, talking to my father, who asked, how are you, Don? And then zip, zip, I was back, and I woke up. So,
oh, my goodness.
That's quite
and
something.
I thought, my goodness, I think I was close to something bad there.
Yes.
Well, the out-of-body experiences where you, like you described, where you're sort of looking down at yourself, I mean, that's been documented as maybe a, you know, almost death experience, but also just a kind of traumatic, you know, you leave yourself and you look down on yourself and you say, shape up, you know, get up, go do something,
write a poem, do whatever you're going to do. Be real.
I don't want to delay the next poem, but some schizophrenics have this system of being this problem of being all over the room. They have trouble gathering themselves into one.
Yeah.
That's an extreme form of schizophrenia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're not there yet, Dale.
Well, I'm not sure.
There's a fine line between
so,
there's a fine line between the art and the madness.
Yes. André Breton put that in the like the very beginning of his Manifest on Surrealism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The Fool's Secret, I spend my life in its pursuit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We're halfway through the program.
Okay.
All right. Now, so I promised a humorous poem. So, of course, this is about the bubonic plague.
Okay. Why not?
Now, the Newberry Library in Chicago is an absolutely fantastic place. I think all of your listeners should immediately get a ticket, go to the Newberry Library, and you can you can hold in your hands incunabula, you know, books in the first 50 years of printing. You can sit there and you can look at old maps that from 1600. It's a great place. So we go there once in a while just to kind of enjoy that part of Chicago. And they had, there was an exhibit, actually it was just a hallway with separate glass exhibits, and they talked about the bubonic plague hitting London in 1665, and they would create weekly bills of mortality per weekend of who died and what they died from.
Yeah.
And these were called bills of mortality. Now, the reason I wanted to write a poem about it is the actual causes of death in the 1600s and 1665 were rather humorous, as you will see. So this poem is entitled, At the Newbury Library, Bills of Mortality. Chronicling the deaths of the sick and the weak, this London Gazette, diseases and casualties, dryly cataloged, each duly departed, tracking the plague each week, 1,083 in this report, but alas, one starved at Stepney. And 12 were stillborn, poor things, were their souls released? And the 47 who perished from teeth? Forgot to floss, no doubt. And some from flux, and others from phlox, and smallpox, and French pox, not to mention those snatched by the rising of the lights. The 10 that expired from worms, and the 2 from wind, were those related, dear God, to the 35 cut down by griping in the guts? And if not for these dreadful exits, the king's evil took 2. Was he informed of this treason? Perhaps so, resulting in the lad who expired and was listed as frighted, literally so. But finally, some good news. For one contented being departed this earth in happiness and in sloth, drowned in a brewer's well at Savior's Southwark. Confident, I am sure, that his Savior, at Southwark, by the way, wondered why that day, with not a hint of malice, instead of the wine, there was beer in his chalice.
Oh, it's a catalog poem, and you're right. It's grim in as far as it's about death, but it's hilarious in terms of how it's remembered or how it's listed.
Yes, and there are so many more of this list. There's like 80, and I could have added another 30, but the poem was just about the right length for me. I ran out of paper at the bottom, and that was the end. You know?
I love the king's evil.
Yeah. That, I've always said that, the king's evil.
The king's evil.
The king's and the flocks and the flux and the smallpox and the French pox. Yeah. There were just oxes all over the place floating around.
And that's where, so you're working off a list and the sound of it, but also the information takes you somewhere you wouldn't have gone necessarily on your own, right?
Right. So and I wanted to save the drowned in the brewer's well at Southwark for the final one, because that was, like I said, alas, some good news. The poor guy drowned in beer.
Yeah. Okay. We're two-thirds of the way through now, so we can read a third poem.
Okay. Well, now, this one is neither, well, I guess it's dark. It's kind of random. It's kind of hectic. It's kind of surreal. I wrote this one in 2009, not recently like the first two. And I want to make clear one thing. This is not about me. It is not about my profession. I loved my job. I love my job. I have no regrets regarding my life, except maybe being a Cub fan. This is random and surrealistic. It's called Rearview Mirror. What exactly is there left of silence now that you have murdered it with your faded semaphore flags protruding from your careless sapphire lips? What ransom did you pay for this confused and dizzy narrator? now that you have seen his disillusionment up close, and lain in sheep's clothing of stained glass dreams, hoping for the daffodils to bloom in the sad and dark November. Where are the scented memories of your youth, now that you have pecked your way horizontally through time and waved the checkered flag of indecision until there is nothing left to hope for? Why do you stand here in your quicksand suit when everyone else just smiles at you in paisley dentures, and you can't recall the most important thing to do while ambition drips away in filtered shadows? But the answers all are echoes, drifting life among the demons, where the nomads make the rules, and the silence isn't golden after all.
Yeah, I can see you in the courtroom.
I love the quicksand suit. That just came. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's wonderful.
So, like I said, it's kind of random. It's kind of surreal. It's, there are just, you know, odd images being thrown in there, and you kind of come and go. It's like a carnival. And
it's Dale hockey is what it is.
Well, there you have a potpourri of different thoughts in there.
Well, and the idea of rearview mirror, seeing things as they've gone by or in the past or larger or smaller than in real life, you know, that works really well.
You know, are you a regular Quint City Poets still?
Yes, I go there. I try and go there first Wednesday of every month when our fearless leader, Catherine Searle, who I believe was on your program last week. She's been doing a great job of ushering us through COVID. We went online. I can't always make it, but I love the fact that it forces you to write one or two new poems, and you, whatever state they're in, you throw them out there, and people do not hold pull punches. You know, and it's really it's nice. You know, you're confident. You find something you really like, and they go ah.
I will remind you, when I read a poem there, everybody had something to say, and you said, "I'll give you my critique later." And I have never, ever received that critique.
I you know, it's interesting. The other day, about a month ago, I came across, and I believe you spelled them just out of comic relief, P-O-M-E-S, poems. And, you know, the funny thing is, some of my critique, I didn't think, I kind of changed my mind about a little. I thought they were better in, like, my eighth reading than they were in the first seven.
Yeah.
That's good.
That is good.
That's nice.
Did he weasel out of that or not?
Weaseling is my middle name.
All right. Oh, do we have time for the,
okay.
Oh,
yes.
Need the last one?
All right. This one is what I would call an inspirational one, maybe a little bit maudlin, sentimental. But our son got into a very excellent school, and he's a very humble fellow. And but he's also confident, and he was terrific, very elite school. And about 2 months before he was going, he was sitting on our stairs, and I saw kind of his head in his hands. I said, "What's wrong with you? What's happening?" He said, I don't know if I can do this. Do what? I don't know if I can cut the mustard at this school. I said, "Are you kidding? You?" Mm-hmm. But it will take all of you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when we went to the school, they had this final little orientation, and then they said, and they had a little talent show. It was very well done. And they said, "Parents, 5-minute warning. You're out of here in 5 minutes. We'll take care of your kids. Mm-hmm. And by the way, those magic markers, these windows on both sides of this lounge, write whatever you want. We'll try and keep that all year for your kids." And I sketched out a little poem called "All of You." And I got home, and after a while, I wrote it, and this is how it came out. all of you. Just be yourself. It is enough, so long as it is all of you. No less, not a jot less. Push the envelope, but do not tear it, unless you are sure it is worth it. Stretch the fabric of that marvelous mind, and mind you mend whatever fences need mending. Remembering, always remembering, that we are one, as woven by John Donne. Dream of your journey, but insist on sitting at the front of the bus. Grounded in that quest, true to yourself, at your best, it is enough. Don't put on airs, but pull on all the oars. You chose Stanford because you saw all willing to be pulling with you. And the ship slides from its slip with all on board. All aboard! Just be yourself. It is enough.
Very good.
Oh, my.
Very good. And you got all four poems in the program. And we got a couple minutes to spare.
I've been in federal appellate courts where you have a light and you have 15 minutes and that's it.
Uh-huh.
And the judges are up there and then they're pestering you with questions that you're only partially prepared for. And the light is, you know, all of a sudden flashing yellow, you know. And in mid-sentence it goes red and they say, "You can finish your sentence, Mr. Hockey." And, you know, it's a very humbling experience.
Well, we wound up here with a minute and a half, I think.
How about that?
Yeah. Well, I always watch his face because he's looking at the clock, and
yes.
I can tell when...
I look at this one, and I go back and forth.
And I can totally lose track of what we're doing, but if I, you know, I have to watch him because that's where the cue comes from.
Yes, I can imagine. If we could be sitting here all afternoon just chatting about these things. And, you know, Rebecca is such a wonderful foil and a creative mind. I mean, and I remember in Comm University, people would write all kinds of wild things or just kind of, you know, very rudimentary things. And Rebecca always found something to work with out of every person's. You'd look at it and go, "My gosh, this! I'm not going to say anything." And Rebecca would say, "I think this image about this sheep is really something to work with. You know, go work on that. I really like that." And so, what a wonderful co-host to have.
Well, you know, it's true. I've always regarded Rebecca as a special person, but I'm not so sure now. If she helped unleash you, she has a lot to answer for.
Purgatory is your lot in life.
No, that's the cool thing about poems. There is almost always, even a really bad poem, something, you know, something brought it to the speaker or the writer's head. And if you can figure out what that is, it's not a failure, you know.
Right,
just,
right.
Well, I'll have to have you look at my poems and give me a critique.
All right.
I can't count on that. But we counted on you being here, and you showed up, and we got four poems in.
Yes. How about that? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dale. It's good to see you again, and good to know that you're still writing poetry. Keep it up, pal.
Thank you, Don. Thank you, Rebecca.
You're welcome.
And that'll do it for today. I'm Don Wooten. Rebecca Wee and I will be back here next week as we continue plowing our way through Poetry Month on Scribble